Welcome to the Shame-Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Thank you for tuning into the Shame-Free Zone. This is your host, Veronica Monet, and I'm broadcasting from Little Garberville, Northern California. It's nestled up here in the Redwood Forest. It's absolutely beautiful up here. There's actually a bit of a storm brewing. It was kind of blowing my Toyota 4Runner all over the freeway on my way to the hotel. Anyway, it's been an excellent day. I've been traveling all over doing house calls, and I've got to tell you, I just love my work, absolutely love it. I walk in, I'm usually working with couples that have got something heavy on their mind, and there's something up for them in their relationship, and by the time I leave, 1 or 2 hours later, everybody's smiling, and there's just a really good feeling in the room. So anyway, I think I'm very lucky. I get paid to do work that really adds a fulfilling dimension to my life. Anyway, if you happen to be in Northern California, I am not quite done with this tour, so you should be able to arrange for a house call somewhere between Garberville and, say, Oakland, San Francisco, actually even Sacramento is a possibility, before I head on back to Nevada City. And you can text me at 415-407-2932. That's 415-407-2932. But on to the show. Tonight we're going to be having a very, very interesting topic. This is called Empowering Men at Birth. Now, I know that might sound a little bit strange. Usually we think about women and birth, but I have a guest tonight who's going to help enlighten us and expand our view of just exactly what the father's role is in the birth of their own children. Her name is Janice Barcelo, and she is a sociologist, an ecstatic birth educator. We're going to have to ask her what ecstatic birth is. And she also works with prenatal and birth trauma prevention. She's an international public speaker, and she hosts a television show called Birth of a New Earth. You can actually find that on YouTube, Birth of a New Earth. She'll probably tell us how we can actually zero in on that. She has a radio program called Love, Sex, Pregnancy, Childbirth, and Parenting, which is on Blog Talk Radio. And she is co-creator of the forthcoming Birth of a New Earth School for Conscious Procreation, which offers educational seminars and teacher trainings, as well as workshops and courses that are designed especially for men. You can also reach her at her website, which is birthofanewearth.com. Janice, thank you so much for your patience. That was a rather lengthy intro, but I am so delighted that you are joining us all the way from Hawaii here in the Shame-Free Zone.
Well, thank you so much, Veronica. I am delighted to be here. I'm looking forward to our conversation tonight.
So am I. Now, which island are you on, more importantly?
I am on Maui. I am in the lap of the mother here. We call her Mother Maui. That's where I live.
I love Maui. I love Maui, and I also like the Big Island.
Very powerful, potent places on the planet, especially for people that are interested in sexuality and things like birth. This is a very potent place to be.
It really is. Now, I'm curious, how did you get involved in the whole ecstatic birth movement? And maybe you could tell our listeners a little bit about exactly what is ecstatic birth?
Well, ecstatic birth can be a number of things. And I want to share that there are women, about 20% of women are reporting having orgasms during childbirth. So when I talk about ecstatic birth, I can include within that category orgasmic birth, that women are experiencing, physiological orgasm. But ecstatic birth can happen without the orgasm, meaning that women and their partners and their babies can have a very spiritually ecstatic experience as the baby comes in through this dimension. It's an experience of extreme joy and deep satisfaction and profound love that the whole family, anybody in the family that's present at the birth, can have that experience. The neurobiology of love just floods the system of the people involved and influences them for the rest of their life. It's not something, it's one of those eternal experiences that bring the love into eternity, and that it's not fleeting like an orgasm would naturally be, very short and temporary. This is an eternal experience that people are carrying throughout their life, and it's very life-changing.
So, you know, I actually have some photos, some still shots, and as you know, I'm going to be getting the video, which hopefully you'll tell our listeners how they can get a copy too, but I'm going to be getting that video so that I can extract a little bit of footage I want to be able to show in my workshops of what an ecstatic birth looks like. Most people are having a really hard time wrapping their mind around it and believing me. Although tonight I was actually talking with a mother who said it was one of the most amazing experiences of her life. Now,
yeah.
Are you finding that, you know, a lot of women will talk about pain during childbirth and kind of object to the whole idea that maybe birth doesn't have to be painful. What do you say about that?
What I say is that if pain is occurring during childbirth, it indicates an erroneous psychological approach to the process of bringing forth life. And that approach can begin at conception with the way that people are having sex, and if they're approaching each other from a place of fleshy indulgence rather than really wanting to bring forth a child, and the child is often conceived haphazardly, and is unwanted, these
mm-hmm.
things will strongly these things will strongly influence the experience of gestation and birth. It's much more complicated than that. If we, those of us that have walked into a technological setting, into a hospital to give birth, that's generally not a setting where ecstasy can happen. Technological birth is a fear-based, pain-riddled death trap. It's definitely not a love-based way to bring in a child, and will influence the mother and father and child's experience of the birth in a negative way, generally speaking. So things to consider. There's very much influence whether or not a woman will have what God intended a woman to have. And I want to stress here that we have a religious system. It says in the Bible that the God of the Bible has pretty much condemned women to suffer in childbirth. So if we are believing in this deity as the source of creation, it's likely we're going to carry that belief system into the birth. And we're going to believe that God has condemned us to suffer birth.
I think what's really important, Janice, too, is that, I mean, you know, a lot of people don't even necessarily believe in God, and they don't necessarily believe in the Bible, but those ancient teachings certainly have a huge impact on people's expectations.
Yes, and what I really want to stress here is that we have to look beyond our religious upbringing and beyond the teachings in the Bible if we really want to get to ecstatic birth. Because if we look anywhere in nature, we can see that God is pro-life, okay? No matter how much pavement and stuff we try to do to pave over the natural world, still the beauty of nature emerges through it. Always nature is reproducing itself, regenerating itself in magnificent splendor and beauty. And that is God's heart. That is God's desire. And God's desire is for us to procreate in a conscious way, to bring forth life. In the same way that God is desiring to bring forth life, we are desiring to bring forth life. Does it make any sense whatsoever that that this pro-life energy that is behind all of creation would want us to suffer?
Wouldn't it, in order to help people to get away from some of those religious biases, maybe do you think it would be helpful to talk about things like, instead of just using the word God, I'm sure some people don't even relate to that word, but maybe the creative intelligence or the universal forces that seem to be at work. I know some people like the word higher power, you know, but there are a lot of different words out there to express what's driving the universe.
Yeah, let's just call it the source that animates all life. Okay, the benevolent.
I like that. That's good.
Yeah, the benevolent source that is behind all of creation. And that source is benevolent. And that's one of the most malevolent expressions of consciousness control in our culture is through religion. And we have to be aware of that. For religions to be purporting that the source of all life would want us to suffer as we bring forth life is something we really need to debunk. We really need to look straight in the face and to know that that is not correct. That makes absolutely zero sense.
Well, certainly that old paradigm is about separating people from their bodies entirely, and I think in a lot of ways, you know, putting the onus on women that there's something wrong with their periods, there's something wrong with breastfeeding, there's something wrong with birth. It's really quite disturbing.
It's extremely disturbing. I notice on Facebook quite often women are, women's Facebook pages are removed entirely because they have images of breastfeeding their babies.
No, are you kidding?
Oh, this is very, very common.
Wow.
Well, you know what? I mean, I sort of get that there is a culture out there that has sexualized breasts, that breasts are in our culture supposed to be for the pleasure of men in the consciousness of many, many people. And that, in other words, breasts have become pornographic and solely for fleshly indulgence. And when we actually use them for what they are really intended for, which is to nurture and nourish life, then people feel offended. That's the sick of our society.
It's very strange to me. I was actually checked into a San Francisco hotel, and I found a Vogue magazine, which was from Europe. I think it was Italian. And on the cover was a young mother with a very large breast, but they didn't look like silicon breasts. They looked like they were probably engorged with milk. And she was suckling a baby on the cover of Vogue. And I thought to myself, you would never, ever in a million years find this in a U.S. version of that particular fashion magazine. It was really kind of shocking. I know women, I did not know that women were getting their websites closed down for showing pictures of themselves breastfeeding, but I knew that women were getting kicked off of airplanes for breastfeeding, and sometimes for breastfeeding under a blanket where you can't even see anything. And it's really quite shocking because she probably could have walked in with a really low-cut push-up bra, you know, showing almost everything except for the nipple or the areola, and it would have been just fine. But the fact that she went to nurse her baby got her kicked off the plane is just mind-boggling.
Well, the sexualization and pornographic objectification of the female form is quite normal in our culture, is considered normal. And breastfeeding is not. So you tell me, you know, how we got this dysfunctional.
it almost seems like somebody's jealous. They just don't want to see that baby getting all that titty.
Well, you know what? I want to speak to that because this is a very important thing.
Well, since we're talking about fathers, I think that's it's your cue.
Let me speak to this because There are men who, most men actually on our planet, who were never properly mothered. Especially if we're born in hospitals and we're immediately separated from our mothers, the bond cannot really occur. This goes for men and women. But particularly for men who are circumcised at birth, normally without anesthesia, who are subjected to extreme sexual violence and abuse before they're 8 days old, the bonding with the mother never happens. And many of us are never breastfed because
That's
we have...
Can we back up just for a minute, Janice?
Yeah.
And actually, I'd like you to explain in more detail about the abuse of firstborn children.
The abuse of children in hospitals is considered normal in the same way that the sexualization of the female form is considered normal. In a hospital environment, when a baby is born, it is immediately separated from its mother. It is subjected to violent protocols such as needles. You know, they inject it with vitamin K, they drop burning drops into the baby's eyes, they cut the umbilical cord before the cord stops pulsing, meaning they're cutting the baby's oxygen supply immediately off before it's ready to breathe, because it's receiving its oxygen through the blood, through the umbilical cord that's attached to the placenta, that's attached to the mother. They cut that off abruptly and violently in a hospital, and I could go on and on about the violence of hospital protocols and the levels of trauma that babies are coming in with, and the fact that we are not able to bond with our mothers. Our mothers are experiencing post-traumatic stress after hospital birth. They're experiencing postpartum depression, which is not normal after you give birth to a child. It should be the most joyous experience of your life. And they are not able to love and properly bond with their children. When a father witnesses his partner nurturing their child in a way that he has never been nurtured, when he witnesses the love between a mother that is now properly bonding and caring for her child that he never had, there's a level of grief that occurs for the father. A very deep level of grief that often causes him to emotionally check out and very often leave. We have an epidemic of disappearing dads after children are born. And part of this epidemic is because of the emotional pain that men experience when they observe the love that's happening for their children that they never got.
Wow. You know, I've never heard anybody explain that before. And I wonder, have you made a connection with also the increase in domestic violence that occurs during pregnancy? Do you think that's part of the same thing?
I think it is. I think it's part of the short-circuiting of the brain system. And what happens during pregnancy is that our own prenatal and birth trauma, in other words, what we experienced while we were in the womb, and what we experienced at birth will begin to surface during a pregnancy. Not that we'll actually remember it with our conscious minds, but our bodies will begin to physiologically respond with the memory of it. Because the memories are in our system. The memories are in our cellular system, they're in our limbic system, they're in our reptilian brain. They just haven't made it up into the conscious part of our mind, but they're in there. And it will activate during pregnancy and at birth, those memories. And I'll take this one step further to say that men who are circumcised, who have been circumcised early in life, will often go into parasympathetic shock as soon as they walk into a hospital environment. If their partners go to give birth in a hospital, they will freeze. Not able to enact their power because their system is remembering this is a dangerous place, there's a dangerous event that's about to happen, these people are going to brutalize me, my child, my partner, and they freeze. They don't even consciously know why the parasympathetic shock is happening, but it's happening because of the memories that they carry in their system. that haven't come up into the conscious mind. Circumcision causes a baby. We have to imagine that this is happening without anesthesia. Okay, the baby's penis, first they get the baby erect to make the baby's penis more easily accessible for the doctor. So as soon as the baby gets erect, they clamp the penis and they cut a piece of the penis off, literally. So the baby will cry in sounds that you could never imagine having come out of a little human being, and then suddenly stop crying, which means that baby boy's system has shut down. It has gone into parasympathetic shock in order to deal with the betrayal and the intensity of the abuse and violence that it is experiencing through circumcision. And that parasympathetic shock will replay itself in life, throughout life, whenever something reminds the system of that event. Whenever there's an event that happens in that man's life that is even remotely similar to what happened to him as an infant, he will have a tendency to go into parasympathetic shock.
I wonder if this is also why a lot of times men, are rather reticent to seek medical care and go to the doctor.
Well, wouldn't you be, like, wanting to stay as far away from these nice, happy maniacs as possible? If your system knew?
Well, I actually have some trauma around being in a hospital because I had to spend a lot of time in a hospital in the first 2 years of my life. So I totally get it. Plus, I've seen the circumcision videos. I saw one years ago. It just broke my heart because up until that point, like a lot of people, I just had no idea how traumatic it is because, they'd always... I got fed the same line of bull everybody else did, which is, oh, no, the baby doesn't feel a thing.
babies are in a heightened state of sensitivity, much more heightened than we are as adults, and they feel everything. From the moment they are conceived, their whole experience is based on sensation. And so what we have is a system that's been lying through their teeth.
Yes.
And hurting all of us. Every single one of us. Put it this way, 95% of American hospital births are considered traumatic. And 50% of those are considered severely traumatic.
Where do you get these statistics?
William Emerson, who is a pioneer in the field of healing for prenatal and birth trauma, did a study. And
wow.
The statistics of the study that he has done, and he's worked with thousands of people
dealing with
their prenatal and birth experiences and helping them heal and recover. These are experiences that influence us for the rest of our lives, how we begin life. Affects the way we live it. When your first sexual experience is one of extreme betrayal and violence, the way that most American boys, that's their first experience. Of course, the wires are crossed for men between pleasure and pain.
Right. I would check with our listeners here. If you have any questions for tonight's guest, Janice Barcello, you can call us here at BBS Radio. That call-in number is area code 530-413-4510. That's 530-413-4510. Or you can try our toll-free number, which is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. I am also on Facebook as we speak, so I posted a question, which is, how can we empower our fathers? And you can go over to my wall and post an answer to that or a question, and I will read it on the air. So, Janice, what about trauma to the little girls that are born? And obviously, we don't circumcise in this country. We don't circumcise little girls. But what are some of the traumas that daughters feel?
Well, we all feel the trauma of the things that I talked about before, which is being separated from our mothers at birth, burning drops, needles, being weighed and measured, you know, being received into the hands of people that do not love us, being swaddled, wrapped in blankets so tight that we cannot move, placed in nurseries with other screaming, terrified infants who are also not able to connect with their parents, being fed on a schedule instead of according to our needs. All of these things are extremely detrimental to human well-being. Let me just back up for a second and say the swaddling of a baby in an artificial blanket that's probably not soft, number one, probably filled with toxic chemicals, number two, prevents when that baby is placed next to its mother, finally, after 20 minutes or an hour or 4 hours or 8 hours, depending on what the hospital decides to do, finally when that baby gets placed next to its mother, all swaddled like that, moms and babies need to be skin to skin. The sensation of the smell of a human being, of the look in a human being's eyes, the touch of skin to skin, all of this is incredibly important, and it's lacking in a hospital. In nature, a mother will leave her baby if the smell of that baby is off. Okay, if something interferes with the scent of a newborn creature, that mother will reject its infant. Okay. They are in hospital doing the same thing by not allowing a mother and a baby to smell, feel, touch, taste, look at each other immediately at birth. And the same thing for fathers. Fathers need to look immediately into their baby's eyes in order to bond with that baby at birth, in order for the neurobiology of love to activate within them.
You know, we have some comments, and I want to give you a chance to interact with some of our listeners. Marshall is saying that the father's role is to lay a solid foundation for the offspring to rely upon. Now, that to me sounds like a pretty hands-off. It's like, you know, you're the breadwinner and maybe the authoritarian figure. But what do you think about that? Lay a solid foundation for the offspring to rely upon.
Well, let me say this. If you want to lay a solid foundation for your offspring, and I don't know who this man is or what his perception is, where he's coming from, the solid foundation starts at conception. And I'll say this. If you're approaching your partner from a place of wanting to have a physically satisfying experience, in other words, you want to have sex with your partner so that you can have an orgasm, and you make a baby out of that, you are not laying a solid foundation for your child. Bingo. Flat out, sexual indulgence, fleshy indulgence will undermine the well-being of your baby if you make
so,
a baby.
You know, obviously, as a sexologist, I'm probably going to have a real big problem with the comment you made there. So I'd like you to explain that further. What is so objectionable about people having orgasms when they're choosing to have a baby?
There's nothing wrong with having orgasms when you're choosing to have a baby. And actually, orgasm would be undermining the potency of what happens when two people come together to consciously co-create and bring forth life.
An orgasm would be undermining it?
The word orgasm is very...
I'm asking you for your explanation. What do you mean by that?
What I'm saying is the word orgasm is not the essence of what happens, because orgasm is fleeting and incomplete and often leaves us with a longing, because most people are having orgasms because they're coming together for purposes of fleshy indulgence, for purposes of physical gratification. They're not coming together because they want to co-create life.
Do you think they're mutually exclusive concepts?
What's that?
Do you think that pleasure and orgasms and creating life are mutually exclusive concepts?
I think that the pleasure that the experience that we derive from coming together, when we come together consciously to bring forth life, is completely different. And when we come together
So so talk about that, maybe so I can understand you better and our listeners as well. How are they different? And how, you know, maybe you don't relate to the word orgasm. I really don't know, but I need more information here because I do not understand what you're trying to communicate.
At some level, you do, and what I'm trying to communicate is that most of us have been conceived in moments of fleshy indulgence, and that is part of why we are having such a hard time understanding who we really are and being able to connect with the fullness of who we really are, being able to connect with the source behind all creation. We have been conceived in ways that have limited us to the physical plane because there was no conscious intention to bring us forth. Okay, when two people come together and they've done everything that they can prior to the conception of their child to make their lives happy, to make a safe space for their children to come in, to shake off all of the occult forces that have tried to control our thinking. When two people come together and they've thought about the kind of child that they want to bring forth, and they bring their bodies together to fulfill the larger purpose, which is to bring forth life, to co-create with the force behind all creation, to bring forth life, then the experience, the pleasure, the quote-unquote orgasm mm-hmm. that they have is eternal. It is something that will bring them into eternity.
So,
whereas
okay, but just to...
Bring our bodies, wait. When
no,
we bring
actually,
our bodies,
I'm going to, you know, I'm going to interrupt. I would like to understand why you think that if a couple is having sex for the purposes of pleasure and a baby happens to result from that, somehow or another the baby hasn't been conceived in the, I don't want to usurp a word here, but it seemed like you said proper manner. I'm not sure. Maybe you can enlarge upon that.
In a way that will allow that child to experience the fullness of its humanity. It will be, in other words, there's several planes of being that a human should be experiencing. And we have been conceiving babies and condemning them to experience only the physical plane of being. So their bodies get born. Okay, our bodies get born, but the fullness of our humanity does not. The full consciousness.
Let's talk about what you think is an ideal situation. Because I'm hearing, I don't know, more about what you think is wrong, but I'd like to hear about what it is you think would be better.
I think I shared a little bit of it. Okay.
Well, I'm trying to pull out of you an explanation that might be a little more tangible.
The first thing that we need to do is to do everything that we can to make our lives happy in preparation to receive our child. We want to create a space of love in which to bring our child. So, of course, we should be in a healthy relationship. We should have a space to welcome our child that is safe and nurturing and nourishing. We should be thinking about our child, what kind of child we want to bring forth. We should be visualizing our child happy in the space that we are creating for them mm-hmm. and visualizing our family living in a life filled with love, all of this prior to conception. We should be, all our thoughts should be focused on the creation of a joyful child that's born, conceived, gestated, and birthed in love.
Okay.
In a space.
So I'm a huge believer in affirmations and creative visualization, and that's great, but do you have some specific tools or techniques that people can do that move beyond just visualizing and affirming?
This is beyond visualizing and affirming. It is about purposeful, conscious activity. Okay, we're coming together. We're going to bring our bodies together to bring mm-hmm. forth life. And we've done everything we can prior to that time to get a clear understanding of the life we want to bring forth and to prepare for that life we want to bring forth. This is not about just visualizing, but the power of imagery is very powerful. So if we visualize our child happy in a place that we're going to bring that child, that can be a very potent thing to do. In addition, you want to have, you know, circumstances where you can gestate that child, and it's not going to be filled with trauma. Most of the kids today, in the womb, the parents don't want them, the mother's considering abortion, the father and the mother are not getting along, they're breaking up, the father doesn't want any part of the baby. This is what babies are coming into right now. Their parents don't have
a home. I agree. It would be great if every child that was ever born was, in, you know, some consciously conceived. But that's not, you know, accidents happen. People get pregnant accidentally, and then they may choose to move forward with that birth. So I would like to ask you, how would you bring a static birth to somebody who perhaps got accidentally pregnant and has decided to go to term? What could they do to have an static birth?
The first thing they need to do is to speak to their baby. First thing they need to do is to get conscious that the way that they've conceived the baby is traumatic. When a baby is not conceived consciously and there's nobody there to welcome that baby into the womb, that's traumatic. When a baby is conceived and the mother finds out that she's pregnant and says, oh shit, that's called discovery shock. That fetus will remember that imprint.
Okay, but what if she says, oh, great. What if it's an accident and she's thrilled?
Then that's great. If she's thrilled upon discovery, that's wonderful. Then just apologize to your baby for the lack of consciousness at conception. That's
really? Really? You would recommend that they apologize?
Yes. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Communicate with your child and say, I am sorry that I didn't have more presence of mind to know you were immediately there and to call you forth, to prepare for you.
Okay.
Because
this sounds pretty shame-based to me. This sounds like it really encourages people to have a lot of regret and be shame-based. So
It's encouraging people to be aware that what we're doing is influencing our species in a very serious way.
Okay, why don't we talk about how a father can experience the birth of his child? I'd like to take you into the delivery room, and they're already giving birth. What is it that men can do to be empowered at the birth of their child?
Well, number one, I would hope that he would have done everything he could.
I know. You've already talked about the conception. I'd like to get to the delivery room. Do you have anything that can be done in the delivery room to create an ecstatic birth?
I was just going to say that. So I would hope that he would have done some homework, him and his partner, about hospital birth and to be aware of protocols that he would want to protect his partner and his baby from. Because for a man to be able to show up as a fierce protector at birth,
right,
will help his partner and his baby. It will also help his relationship because his partner will be able to respect him if he takes a stand in the hospital to protect them both from some of the heart.
If men are traumatized, and I think, you know, what you said about men being traumatized by circumcision and so therefore wanting to back away from a hospital birth and not be too involved, what can they do to get past that? Let's say, you know, they don't have time to go through a year's worth of reorientation or therapy and they're expecting a baby a month from now. What could they do to really feel empowered and show up in the hospital and get past some of that?
Veronica, let me stress that I think for a man to really show up empowered at birth requires preparation before you get to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't just get to the hospital and expect yourself to be empowered. If you're carrying birth trauma and you haven't done any work to bring it to consciousness and resolve it,
uh-huh,
the chances are activate in the hospital. So everything that I stress is preparation before birth, because by the time you get to the birth, it's too late.
Okay, well, fair enough.
If you haven't done the work.
So let's go back to the things that are bad about the hospital. What are some of the things that they should be looking for? You said you hope men would be aware of some of the bad things that can happen in a hospital. What would those be?
Well, two of the main things that I would stress is, number one, don't let them circumcise your baby if your baby is a boy. Number two, do not let them cut the umbilical cord until the cord has stopped pulsing.
Okay, now how will they know if it's stopped pulsing?
It's very visible whether there's blood pulsing through the cord or not.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, does that have to be prearranged with most hospitals, or will they comply with that if the father says, you know, I want to cut it and I'm not ready to cut it yet? Do hospitals give them?
This is the thing. This is why we need fierce protectors, because hospital personnel can be very dominating and aggressive and forceful. So if a man is not prepared to be in his strength and power, it won't be possible for him to protect his child from these protocols.
Right.
There are women that have written up birth plans that say, I don't want the baby's umbilical cord cut until it stops pulsing. And they'll do it anyway. You know, they specifically write it up what they want, and the doctors sort of railroad over them. So that's why the men...
I saw a film of a birth like that, and, you know, it was the mother was saying, please don't, and they were doing it anyway. And why do you think that is? Why do you think the nurses... In this case, I was watching a nurse be brutal. But what do you think that is? To me, it looked like severe... control issues, like we almost take parenting away from the parents. You know,
exactly.
The hospitals don't want you to be empowered or participate in any way.
That's part of it. I think there's a much darker agenda, and I really don't want to get into it here. Let me say that I think that hospitals are places of extreme darkness, and that they are controlled by forces of darkness, and this is what we need to be watching out for. A father, to be empowered at birth, needs to make sure that the doctor is not usurping the father's role. So, for example, if the doctor steps in right in front of his wife's yoni as the baby is emerging and catches that baby instead of the father, then that doctor has usurped the father's role. And it will undermine the preservation of love in that family. The father needs to take front and center stage as the support person at birth and not let somebody steal that from him.
Now, I've noticed when I'm watching the orgasmic birth videos that the fathers are very involved. But it kind of looked to me like there was... I don't know, I would call it sexual foreplay between the mother and the father during orgasmic birth. Am I viewing that accurately, or is that something else?
I have seen much of the orgasmic birth videos out there, and what I notice is that there is often nipple stimulation, because nipple stimulation can enhance contractions,
mm-hmm.
and There is sensuality, so there's massage, there's kissing, it's a very sensual experience. I wouldn't call it overtly sexual because, you know, it's not like how do I articulate this without offending people on your show? It's a very sensual, involved, intimate experience,
mm-hmm.
of love that's happening at birth, and it's not sexual. They're not there to try to get off.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they're there. They are there to bring forth life.
Well, just for the record, there's a lot of things that are sexual that are not about getting off. But anyway, moving on. What effect does this have on the baby? I noticed watching orgasmic birth that the babies looked very peaceful, and that oftentimes there was no crying. I think a lot of people think the baby should cry. And can you talk to that a little bit about why the babies, or is that just some of the videos that I've seen? Does an ecstatic birth lead to a very peaceful experience for the baby?
An ecstatic birth, when the mother is releasing the neurochemicals of love, of ecstasy, those neurochemicals are flooding into the system of the baby as well. And so the baby will be experiencing love and ecstasy at the same time, which is not likely to make the baby cry, as opposed to being in a hospital where the mother is experiencing fear and pain and stress, and then the neurochemicals of that will be flooding the baby, and on top of which the babies are exposed to extreme violence. So they cry. They're terrified, and they're being hurt. And, of course, they cry. So in a gentle birth, most likely in a home birth, babies have a much better chance of not crying.
Amazing.
I have pictures of babies ecstatic as they're born.
Can we find this? I've actually got to wrap this show up now, but can they find any video or photos of ecstatic birth on Birth of a New Earth on your website?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have video there, too?
I have videos of my TV shows there. I have video clips from other people's videos. You know, there's a lot on my website. So, you'll find it at birthofanewearth.com. Yeah.
Birthofanewearth.com. Janice, I firmly believe that if we can stop having these violent births, we will create a more peaceful planet. And I love the idea of both ecstatic birth and orgasmic birth. I think it's a paradigm shift whose time has come. And I want to thank you for joining us here in the Shame-Free Zone. Anything else that you want to add real quick? We've got about 60 seconds here, and you can let the listeners know how to contact you if you like.
Real quick, I want to say that when a father approaches a partner to have sex, please think of that woman as a woman that you love and as a co-creator instead of as a sexual object. And that will influence any children that you produce. How you think about the woman that you're having sex with and how you think about the sex that you're having will influence the outcome of your child and that child's understanding of love and relationship. So this is not often talked about. It's just important for us to get conscious. And if you'd like to ask me more questions, please visit me at birthofanewearth.com.
All right. Thanks, Janice. Thanks so much for being in the Shame-Free Zone. So to our listeners, and one more time, just want to let you know that if you do have any comments or questions and you want to go over to Facebook, you're welcome to post. I may not be able to read it on the air anymore because we are wrapping this show up, but I can always respond to you personally. And I am on tour, so if you want to find me before I get back to Nevada City, give me a call or text me at 415-407-2932. Once again, that's 415-407-2932. I'm probably not going to go on a tour until February after this. So hook up with me now or wait until Valentine's Day. Okay, and again, what I do is house calls for couples. I teach anger management. And I also teach sacred sexuality. I've got a great PowerPoint presentation that I use to highlight a lot of things, including orgasmic birth. And, of course, I am very much about helping you to embrace sex in all of its forms, as long as it's conscious and it's something that's positive between you and whomever you choose to engage with. Be that somebody of the same gender, somebody of the opposite gender, whether you're looking for an orgasm or you're looking for a spiritual transformation, I don't have an agenda for you except to hopefully enlarge your life and make it a happier one. So that's it for the Shame-Free Zone, guys. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I will see you here again Monday next week. Good night.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with you.